Hello and welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
And over the course of this episode, we are both going to be getting appropriately high through various different methods. I swear they're all legal.
Entirely legal. I shall be imbibing the caffeine, the coca bean, delightful, aromatic, double, delicious.
Whereas I have already had an energy drink that I am pretty sure just kicked in.
Huzzah!
And I will be following that with the recently discovered and appropriate as all hell, thank you so much for this, Elizabeth Banks, Diet Cocaine. Which, yes, is an honest-to-God mix of Diet Coke and champagne.
Which I did have, like, I did buy a bottle of champagne for, and I've had an exhausting couple of days, dear listener, and so I just, yeah, when you're too exhausted to drink, that's when you know it's like, I just gotta go to bed. I gotta either go to bed or hand me some of that literal cocaine. Otherwise, oh, sweet fuck. If I drank that right now, I would probably down the entire bottle in half an hour, become incoherent, delightfully so, and just like pass out on camera. It would be great. It would be a very long episode because I would sleep till the next morning. But hey, that's what bonus content is for, I suppose.
True. And also, also a quick side note and personal trivia here. Speaking of bonus content, I'm pretty sure that this episode will also mark my first time drinking champagne ever.
Ooh, enjoy. Have you already popped the cap?
Well, I actually just opened the twist top a few minutes ago.
Twist top. Twist. Ah, champagne. I see.
It was a cheap bottle. What? I'm a $12 classy bitch. Okay.
Delicious Prosecco. And I'm not crapping on Prosecco. It is good. I was in France once in the Champagne region, having a lovely lunch in a tiny village, and I saw an angry mob go by, and apparently they were on the way to what turned out to be like a minor riot, a small pastoral French riot. You know, the French, they do like their riots. And it was champagne workers. I saw a champagne riot.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was fun. Delightful stuff. I suggest drinking it with quite a lot of orange juice. You can tell that when my mouth is moving faster than my brain.
And also, if anyone is going to complain about my choice of alcohol on this episode, I would like to note on Elizabeth Banks's TikTok, the post where I discovered Diet Cocaine, she used canned champagne.
Gross. California California nonsense. As you may have figured out by now, we're watching Cocaine Bear!
Medic!
Oh, Jesus. What is that?
Beth, we should go.
Millions of dollars worth of cocaine fell from the sky this morning in Knoxville, Tennessee.
There's more of this out there. They dumped it somewhere.
I'm looking for my daughter.
Forest is a dangerous place.
Hey, Henry, check it out. Something got into it. A deer, maybe.
A lot of cocaine was lost. I need you to go and get it.
No, don't eat that, don't eat that.
Let's see what kind of effect that has on us.
The bear, it fucking did cocaine. A bear did cocaine.
There was a bear.
A bear?
It was far.
Hey, that's inappropriate.
You're safe. Bears can't climb trees.
Of course I can.
Huh? Higher, baby.
Oh, shit.
Get higher, baby.
Oh, no. It kind of seems like the thing that stays with a man forever.
Apex predator. High on cocaine. Out of its mind. Oh man, you fucked.
What the fuck is wrong with that bear? Shoot it, man! Bear speeder!
Get higher, baby, and don't ever come down!
We have such good luck in nature.
The most glorious, based on a true story, movie ever.
Yeah, I really liked what they did with this. You know, they took it and ran, and that's good. That's good. Some things, yeah. Some stories are really good in passing as like novelties, and the Cocaine Bear is a passing in novelty story. There's not necessarily much to it. The majority of details in the Cocaine Bear story actually like are rather mundane and human related in reality. But this goes, okay, but let's focus on the bear and the cocaine instead of, you know, the people. And in focusing on the bear and the cocaine, wouldn't you know it, they found the people again. Because goddamn, this film is just shoved fucking like thick with great character actors. It's a fantastic ensemble cast, which is just, it's not what I expected coming into Cocaine Bear, but I'm very happy to see it in Cocaine Bear. This is the best C-list movie that I just assumed the Asylum would have come up with at some point in their life. And yet here we are. Like, every version of every character in it is an Asylum level character, but done with Hollywood precision and skill.
Oh yeah. And now quick note regarding the actual Cocaine Bear story.
Mm-hmm.
The actual Cocaine Bear story is basically the first roughly 15, maybe 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, so there was this cop named Andrew C. Thornton II, who determined, hey, yep, wait a minute, I keep having to arrest all these drug dealers, and they've got, like, way better cars than I have ever thought of driving, and their clothes is way better, and they get, you know, cocaine head every night. Why am I a cop? Oh, okay. Fuck this. And he went off and joined. Yeah. He went off and became part of what was called The Company, a major cocaine ring that more or less would fly coke very slowly from dealer to dealer to dealer to dealer up from South America into America. This was not one of the attempts by the American government that I'm aware of to have brought in cocaine for the crack epidemic. No, this was good old-fashioned American capitalism made at home by guys with really shaggy mustaches. It was the 80s, chest hair was big. And so, yeah, Andrew C. Thornton II and another man were on a Cessna, if I recall, with a shit ton of cocaine.
To be precise, it was according to Wikipedia anyway, Thornton and an accomplice departed on a self-piloted Cessna 404 Titan.
Delightful.
Along the route, they dropped a load of 40 plastic containers of cocaine into the wilderness before abandoning the plane above Knoxville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because... And to be fair, this was not the plan. Despite being self-piloted, they apparently didn't know how to, you know, like, account for weight and fuel. And yeah, weight and fuel together in a plane equal a bad time. If you don't have enough fuel to weight, you're going to have a really short flight. And apparently that's kind of what happened. And I really like the way they played with it in the movie. Andrew C. Thornton II is throwing bags of coke out, clearly coked out of his own head, while singing along to a great 80s track. And hyping himself up a little too much, knocks himself out and falls to his death. There's no indication necessarily that this happened, but one way or another, he hit the ground full on.
Yeah, that's. I was just about to say that the only thing from the opening that I don't know for sure is true is whether or not he got high on his own cargo beforehand.
I mean, one must assume. This is 1985, and he is a coke dealer in America, in a plane about to jump out of it. He definitely probably was on coke, at least a little bit, you know, just to take the edge off. Just to take the edge off. It's fine. It's fine. What really impresses me about this story, this true story, is it was only a month later that I was born. So coincidence? I don't know.
So you were born after a major drug drop. I was born pretty much simultaneously with the FLQ terrorist attacks in Quebec.
Ah, well, you know. We all have our faults and diplomatic
exactly.
coups. Oh dear. But inevitably, a bit of time after this, a bear was found dead in the woods. It happens. Sometimes you find a dead bear. Most of the times you don't want to touch it. It probably died from a disease. But this bear had choked itself is not quite correct. It did have a heart attack, if I understand, but more importantly, it was impacted with cocaine. It had eaten so much cocaine, it was impacted. That's incredible. It took Elvis decades of overeating to become impacted to the point that it killed him.
Now, apparently the chief medical examiner from the Georgia State Crime Lab stated that the bear's stomach was, quote, literally packed to the brim with cocaine. However, he estimated that the bear had only absorbed about 3 to 4 grams into its bloodstream.
Which, like,
at the time of death.
For a bear out and about, that's not going to do anything. Like clearly, this bear was looking for a harder hit. Otherwise, it was stopped after the first claw or two.
You said that it died of I think cardiac arrest,
which is typical now, when you ingest way too much cocaine.
My understanding was that it was not specifically that the bear's heart shut down, causing it to die. It was that the bear's all of its internal organs shut down.
See, now I can see that. That's the impacted. If you fill a stomach, you can die for various reasons. It just seems that in the amount of time necessary, to both ingest that much cocaine and to have only 3 to 4 grams of it seep into your bloodstream via digestion, or even if there was like a tear in your in the bear's stomach, some of that cocaine would then get into like parts of your bloodstream. Due to how little is going on, there had to have been a very quick catalyst for death. And it's one of those things of like, who knows? Because we've never tested for what happens if you pack a stomach full of cocaine. I don't know. We can tell you what happens if a balloon bursts in a stomach of cocaine. We can tell you like a lot of things to do with stomachs and amounts of cocaine. But this is like, you have gone off the scale into unchartable realms. And then we're dealing with the fact that it's a bear. And it's like, what happened? It ate the cocaine and died. How did it die? Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cocaine.
It ate a fuck ton of cocaine. What more do you need to know? How about the fate of the body of the bear?
Indeed. So the thing that that has kept this very odd little novelty alive this whole time is what happened to the bear.
So, and again, reading from Wikipedia here, so you take this as you will. Apparently, the chief medical examiner had decided he did not want to waste the body of the bear, so he had it taxidermied and gave it to the Chattahoochee River National Recreation Area. That's basically how we get the park in the movie.
And that's Kentucky for you, folks.
Exactly. Apparently, the bear, however, at some point disappeared and then emerged again in a pawn shop. Eventually, it makes its way to the Kentucky for Kentucky Fun Mall in Lexington, Kentucky, where it remains to this day.
Mm.
Now, good old Pablo Escobar, which...
good name.
Kentucky, I love you just for that name.
That's a good name. That's a good one.
Allegedly, at some point, the bear was owned by Waylon Jennings and kept in his home in Las Vegas, although that's never been, like, confirmed or nothing.
But that's also, like, but, yeah, no, that sounds about right. At some part, you know, some point after ingesting a shit ton of cocaine and dying, disappearing, and then reappearing, which I can only assume is some sort of resurrection nonsense, it went off and partied with Waylon Jennings. Yes, of course!
Oh yeah. Now this last paragraph, I'm just gonna read straight from Wikipedia. I need you to hear this and just bask in the pure Kentucky of everything I'm about to read. According to the bear's owners, the cocaine bear has the authority to officiate legally binding weddings in the mall where it is kept due to Kentucky's marriage laws. This claim is only partly true. The bear does not have the authority to solemnize weddings, but the state of Kentucky cannot invalidate marriages performed by unqualified persons if the parties believe that the person marrying them has the authority to do so. As such, it is a belief in the cocaine bear's authority that allows it to officiate legally binding weddings in Kentucky.
See, faith is action. At least in Kentucky. Fuck.
Like, it's just... That is the most pure, absurd wedding officiate possible outside of Vegas.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think it might... Even then.
Yeah, that's... That's super special, and I'm sure has a really fascinating and ultra creepy history behind its, precedent. Fuck. Well, this has gone in ways that I didn't expect a cocaine bear movie to go, and we're not even really too far into it. Oh my.
No, this was going to be making the theme list of movies that are personally important to me, no matter what, because we've already established, you know, I love The Asylum. I love bad movies, but like bad, insane movies that have a heart, a purpose, that we're actually trying to do something. And as you said earlier, this looked like it was basically going to be an Asylum film with money. And make no mistake, the Asylum version is coming. Thank you, Attack of the Meth Gator.
Yes, yeah, I did see Attack of the Meth Gator advertised as I think you messaged me and went, look. It's like, oh my Jesus Christ.
Goddamn right.
I hope they did manage to find an actual true story to base that on. I hope there was a meth gator. And since it's Florida, yeah, there's probably a meth gator. But... This film, I'm so damn happy that obviously they took a smart approach to this. It's a smart, dumb film. It's a very smart, dumb film. It knows exactly what to do in the right moment to have the most impact and to have the most fun. And this film, from the moment that Buddy whacks his head and falls out of the plane, The rest of it is utter fucking nonsense in the best way. This is the smartest approach to telling a true story. It's kind of like the flip side of the coin of The Perfect Storm. So on the other side is you have the movie The Perfect Storm, a true, quote unquote, true story about a real event with real people.
Yeah.
But 90% of it is completely fucking made up because the story you're telling is unrecorded. And in this case, vastly utter nonsense for cheap thrills. In that case of the movie, everyone died at the end. Thus, you can go, hey, who's to say it didn't happen? And I was expecting the same to happen in this, where everyone dies and they unrelated, like someone unrelated comes across this park filled with horribly, grotesquely killed people. And it's just like, what the fuck happened here? And they could come up with some great legend about some murderous psychopath going nuts one day and have never, never connected it to the cocaine bear. I thought that's where this was going. And I'm the only reason this doesn't get a perfect like S score from me is because it ends with a happy note. And it's like, I don't want a happy note. At the very least, have the plane circle back and hit those fucking kids.
Well, to be perfectly honest, I was good with the happy note because I'm sitting there going, wow, this movie has more heart than it has any right to have.
And it definitely does, yes.
But
like even the bad guys have a lot of heart.
Yeah, yeah. but with that said, I will give you some headcanon that may help you with that happy ending. 75% of this movie takes place in the minds of those two kids as they're dying from a cocaine overdose.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, all right. Let's go with that. From the moment they both spoon feed themselves heaps of cocaine. Exactly. I can see that. I could see that. And to be very fair, I really enjoyed this film. This was a lot of fun. It's a lot of laughs. They were very smart in how they made this movie. First of all, the bear is fantastic. And I don't just mean like, it looks fantastic. That's good animation and interaction with real world actors. It's the character choices. Every time that bear does cocaine, it has a different contextually driven response. The bear on cocaine acts just like a person on cocaine. You never know what you're gonna get.
And yeah.
The moment that won me over so fully, like, you know, obviously at this point I'm invested in the film and I'm watching it, but was when the bear, after the bear literally eats.
Please be the butterfly.
The butterfly is nice.
Please be the butterfly.
The butterfly is nice. The butterfly is driven from the same place, I want to say. But after the bear ingests the entire brick of cocaine, just like a bird, it notices one of the drug dealers, and it's not looking at him the way it's looking at everyone else. You know, it doesn't have the blood craze in its eye. And it, with affection on its face, it starts laying on its back, pushing itself closer to him. Using just its back legs.
Okay, yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, yes, that there, this entire thing, this complete shift in personality, this bizarre fixation, this really odd way of mobilizing yourself towards the thing that you are now just like, oh, that's cocaine. That bear is on cocaine. Awesome. Fantastic performance. Bear on cocaine.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, what was the CG for the bear top notch? No. Do I fucking care? No.
I truly do not care. They managed to achieve it well enough, and with a story with great jokes and fun characters to watch, and just like really entertaining set pieces. If you're paying attention to like the accuracy of the bear model, you're missing the point of a movie about a bear on cocaine murdering a bunch of people. And to be very clear, as this movie takes place in the 80s, 80s horror movie logic, with the exception of the kids who did drugs and therefore should have been murdered.
Oh, no. And I mean, again, like I said, those kids died one way or the other.
Technically, they didn't do drugs because they did coke wrong. So I guess that's how they get out of it.
No. I got curious and I checked. Had that been crack rocks, no, nothing would have happened. But apparently, ingesting cocaine powder, yeah, that like I said earlier, those kids are dead.
I could see that. Because
apparently it does have the same effect.
I wonder. I mean, you know, obviously it's. The joke is they're kids, they're dumb, they don't know how to do coke, they just, like, ate a mouthful of it. And you know, they spit out the vast majority of it immediately. It's all very cinnamon challenge-y, visually. You're probably factually right, those kids are definitely gonna die. I was surprised that they didn't have them amp their performances up a little bit, or at least have one of them be like, my mouth is numb.
Yeah.
My mouth is numb. But that was a great fun moment, because, yeah, you think it's like, is this movie actually... Like, at this point, you've seen some shit. This movie has shown you some shit. But you're like, am I going to really see children do blow on screen? Is that where this is finally leading? Is the time right? Is 2023 going to be the year where I see children do cocaine? Are we here? And instead, they just shove that spoon right in their mouth. And it's like, ah, have your cake and eat it too. And then shit on it right on the floor in front of everyone and hand out slices. It was a brilliant joke.
Yeah. And again, you did actually see kids do cocaine on screen.
Yes.
But because it's not the traditional method, this movie... put kids doing cocaine on screen and got it past every censor that this movie was ever put in front of.
Now, to be fair, this movie is rated R, so most of the censors are just being like, hey, it's not titties, therefore it's fine.
I mean, fair, I'm just thinking children doing cocaine and it only got an R.
Drug use is only measurable by R unless it is literal on-screen drug use of a proven controlled substance. Yeah, it would literally have to be cocaine for them to have gotten a harder rating. As it is, R is, you know, typically R is a death note for most films, at least in America. Whereas, you know, in countries like Canada, it means it's fucking awesome. But American consumers hate, like, they don't go to the theater for it. But this film, now this is as much a comment on the now waning returns of MCU films after their 32nd. So, you know, not that bad.
Yeah.
This film came second at the box office behind Quantumania, and at the moment has like almost doubled its budget with profit. So it's like it's success by the metrics that it has to work in, which are entirely fucked up. Had this come out somehow 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it would have been a bigger movie. I look at this and I think, my God, the creators of Snakes on a Plane must be really fucking furious at themselves for not just being like, no, we should have committed even harder. This is an example of how to do it. Commit hard. Fuck the truth. The bear lives at the end. Everyone else dies.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, 20 years ago, I don't know if it necessarily would have been bigger. I'm just thinking in terms of early on, I was hearing comparisons between this movie and Slither. And Slither,
I can see
it's a tenuous comparison.
Yeah, like I put this more in the realm of like, I am not necessarily saying it would have been like a massive box office success, but it would have become a cult film. Especially
I was just gonna say that's where it would have gone.
Yeah, this would have become like a college cult film, and by that would have made a ton of fucking cash back. It's the Matt Damon complaint. Without VHS, we're fucked. You know, you need rentals. The industry needs rentals. This is a rental movie. This screams rental. This not only screams rental, this screams the kind of rental you as a child would have tried to scam the rental store into renting you. I've got my mom's permission. It's fine. It's fine. Of course I can see Cocaine Bear. What do you think I am, a loser?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, when I say that I can see the comparisons to Slither, I'm just thinking in terms of how Elizabeth Banks directed this and, like, starred in Slither, which was a James Gunn movie. And a lot of the jokes in here, I found in it, were very James Gunn-esque.
I mean, yeah, I can see that. I don't think they had the amount of abrasion necessary for a James Gunn joke, a Slither-era joke. But, like, there's a lot of terrific humor and use of tension in this. Ridiculous scenarios. I like to think that most of this film, at least like a lot of the action scenes, a lot of the staging and such, was developed backwards, where they determined what ridiculous array they want to find bodies in. Because, like, one guy's on top of a gazebo. There's a dead cop on top of a gazebo. Why? I don't know. There's the park ranger's over there. Half her face is gone. She's attached to a gurney. The ambulance that she clearly fell out of is half a mile down the road. It crashed into a tree. The two people inside of it have been mauled. What the fuck? You know, like, I almost feel like they worked backwards from how can we find the most fucked up situation and then include the bear to have been the perpetrator of these things. Like, the paramedics who come into the ranger station, and it's like, I thought they called it a concussion, and there's just a guy laying with his fucking head missing. And it's like, what the shit happened here? And then you don't have enough time because the bear is after you. The bear is after you.
And, okay, also with that, a couple of things that I truly appreciated. Mm. The fact that at the ranger station, one of these teen delinquents that they brought up gets his brains blown out, not by the bear, but by the fact that the park ranger is a terrible shot.
Like a truly terrible shot. It was an impressive fuck up, and you can see it happening because she's a terrible shot. She's wavering on all that, but you've seen this 1,000 times in a movie and it not end, you know, like badly. And it's just, yes, I love how it's a small, simple thing, but don't stand in front of someone who's got a fucking gun. Don't shoot past someone. You're not a good enough shot. She's such a colossal fuck up. It's a delightful character. Yeah.
And also with the park ranger, when the paramedic is examining her and the park ranger is trying to warn the paramedic about the bear.
Mm.
And she is clearly so weak that she doesn't have the vocal strength to actually get the word out. Seeing her take the stethoscope and speak into the stethoscope so the paramedic hears her that way was another, okay, that's just a nice thing that I haven't seen anywhere else, and I appreciate the movie so much more for doing it.
Yeah, and I was expecting her to, like, shout bear and like deafen the person, but like having it just be bear. It was just, oh, that is lovely.
Yeah.
Because it immediately leads into the energy and the loudness and the activity of, you know, the chase that follows. But it's just, it's this great little like, go. Wonderful. I know it's an odd thing to say because she already had a successful career, but this Elizabeth Banks character, she has a future in the pictures.
Yeah, like, to be quite frank, I mean, I know that when people think Elizabeth Banks in comedy, a lot of people are probably going to go to her Charlie's Angels and the negative reception that got. And I feel like I see where you're coming from, but I'm also looking at this movie and going, she has clearly learned from that.
Yeah, like there's a lot you can't compare it to based on rating alone. Like if you could make a rated R Charlie's Angels film, that would have been a vastly different movie in so many ways. That's apples and oranges. That's not even apples and oranges. That's apple and muffin. It's a chocolate chip muffin. There's no apple to it.
Oh no, you're absolutely right. Like I'm just thinking in terms of if you say Elizabeth Banks in comedy, especially Elizabeth Banks directed comedy, Charlie's Angels is the one that's going to be freshest in people's minds, so I can see them going there.
Yeah, fuck them. I don't even consider Charlie's Angels fair, comedy. Fair. It is an adventure chick flick. It is an action film. You know, it's got comedic elements, yes, because it's bright and bubbly and shit. But this is a comedy. Comedy is tragedy. Tragedy happening to other people. Tragedy on a large scale happening to a personal person who often you don't like. That's comedy. It's funny as fuck. Seeing like, seeing this ragtag group of some interesting, some oddball, some charming, mostly the charming ones survive. And some just outright like, oh yes, I can't wait to see you die. The teenage boys, they were great because I hate them and I like to see them suffer.
Yeah.
Really well portrayed, really well put together 80s idiot bullies. The kind of men, the kind of boys who would try to hold up a black man in a public restroom who is taller than two of them put together and think that it's going to end well. Sure.
And I have to applaud O'Shea Jackson Jr. for that scene specifically because they could the three teen ruffians. And I'm only calling them that because ruffians is a word that I otherwise never get to use. Like they all walk into the bathroom and are convinced that they're intimidating. And O'Shea Jackson just standing there like, really? Are we really going to do this?
I loved how over being in this he was. Not O'Shea Jackson himself. Obviously, he's doing such a brilliant character work of committing to just being that guy who's like, I have been attached to this and I don't want to. This is not how I want to spend my day. This is not even my fault. And yet I have to clean it up. Again, and now these little shitheads are bothering me. Ha, this is going to be cathartic. And then he breaks them. Like Batman going to work.
And just for good measure, he ends up with a butterfly knife sticking out of his shoulder.
Like Batman, pretty much every other night.
And this is some people might consider this a screw up on the part of the film, but I was kind of impressed by this because due to our delays in recording this episode, I ended up seeing this thing twice in theater, which is Actually, this is actually the first movie that, now that I'm thinking about it, the first movie that I've seen twice in the theater in a fair while.
You might even say it's addictive.
But... I've seen it twice in theater. I still have no idea how that knife got in there.
It's one of those... Okay, so when it comes to choreography, there are a couple ways of doing it. You can have cinema verite,
yeah,
where every movement of a fight is worked out and you see it. You see every movement. You see transition, contact, repulse, defense. You see everything. And then there's another kind where it's like, that fucking doesn't matter because we're not here to watch fight scenes. We're here to watch, like, the chaos of a bad situation turn worse because of the people involved and the context and situation that it leads to, namely a bear high on cocaine. And so when you have that kind of thing, you're allowed to have, like, cuts that don't make sense in a fight. You can have him jump between like feet in one direction or another, or suddenly he's attacking someone else, or this one guy who was on the ground out cold is now spider monkeying his way on top of you, and it's like, what the fuck? You know, it's meant to create a sense of chaos of being in, say, a four-person brawl where you're the one person the other three are going against. And to suddenly just turn around and be like, oh, and there's a knife in my back. When did that happen?
Yeah.
Terrific, like, classic violent gag. When did I even get stabbed? I don't remember this. God damn it. I hate fights.
I mean, there's no way they would actually do this just because it's too cheap of a joke even for this movie. But you almost expected Jackson to just look around and go, which one of y'all stabbed me?
Yeah, I was kind of expecting that, but I do kind of like his assumption later on that, like, you know, it doesn't matter who stabbed me. The three of you are responsible. So whoever I can get my hands on,
yeah,
and drag along with me, you're responsible. And I fucking hate you.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact that the choreography and the editing was so smooth, flowed so well, and that knife still just magically appears.
Such a great presentation, such a great bit of performance from him to work this character and make him sympathetic,
yeah,
throughout. This character is sympathetic. The guy he is working with, who is the son of one of the major drug dealers, great sympathetic character. I really like how they're just like, they're in a buddy film. They're not buddies. They're in a film where you become buddies by the end of it. But they're in an unrelated buddy film that happens to enter into this. And, like, the park ranger and the idiot teens are in a completely different unrelated buddy film.
Yeah.
The two precocious little fucking children who get lost in the woods are in another. Like, these are all cliche films of the 70s and 80s. And having them all just slam together in a cacophony of violence was entertaining as hell. And well-paced. It doesn't blow its load. It leads you slowly and methodically through, like, scenes and pacing and chapters and stupidity to the point that when you finally reach, say, the Cubs bathing in cocaine, to the point that, yeah, they, like, one character even goes, they look like polar bears. It's, you're just like, yep.
Oh,
good.
God bless you, Henry.
Hooray.
Yeah, that was Henry. Like, if you needed a good line from a kid, I'm telling you, it, aside from that, the scene where the two of them eat spoonfuls of cocaine, and a good line from a kid, it was from Henry. And again, a James Gunn-esque character, sort of an audience avatar.
Yeah, the kids are definitely, like, the kids are very, like, how to put it. They're like 80s kids actually were, not how 80s kids were portrayed, in that they barely could stand each other's presence, and they swore a lot more than you would ever think. And it was great, because, yeah, it's like, I can relate to these kids. Goddamn Hellspawn.
And also, just to add on to that, there's also just the simple fact that a lot of Henry's lines were basically the movie going, yeah, this is fucking insane, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Isn't it? You might as well have named him Lampshade.
Yeah, precisely. But at no time does it feel, as so many other movies it would, at no time does that dialogue ever feel, you get it,
No, because, like, the way he delivers it is he kind of zones out for a minute, you know, the way kids do sometimes, and says something profound, and it's like, you maybe have 1% of an idea of what you just said, but yeah, you're right about that, little dude.
Yeah, exactly.
This is Ray Liotta's, or this is possibly one of Ray Liotta's last movies. If it is his final one, definitely going out on top. He was just joy to watch. A fantastic Ray Liotta bad guy, i.e. a criminal who sells drugs. Who knew? I mean, listen, Ray could play very well in a very set restriction of characters. On the outside, you have, like, angry dad of the girl you're dating and you don't want to ever have to deal with. On the other side, the guy from fucking Goodfellas and everything and all of the violence in between.
According to IMDb, this is Ray Liotta's final completed film role before his passing on May 26th of 2022. Liotta died a week after he came to re-record his lines in post-production. Elizabeth Banks said that Liotta praised the look of the bear once he got a look at it. And to me, I think the most interesting thing is this. With this being Liotta's final film, I could see people putting him in that list with Orson Welles and Raul Julia as actors, well-known quality actors who went out on quote-unquote terrible films. But I'm also sitting here going, this is Ray Liotta going out playing a gangster in a fucking insane film.
Yeah, this is like the evolution now, of his oeuvre as an actor. And it's like, it begins serious gangster, and it ends with a guy being mauled by bears who are on cocaine. Yes, that'll do, pig. That'll do.
Oh, yeah. No, I would not say evolution. I would say that this is the final form of Ray Liotta as an actor, because this is Ray Liotta going out in the type of role that he was the most famous for, in the type of movie that exemplifies the utter insanity of a lot of this man's resume perfectly.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's entirely fair. I really enjoyed this. And this is one of those films where it's like, we could tell you all the details. We could tell you the story. We could tell you. It's a thing that you have to see to enjoy, because there's just too much fun being had on screen. There's a lot of fun. Like, you know, obviously making a movie is a lot of work. A lot of work. But you kind of get the feeling that this one was a lot of fun to work on.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, we made those comparisons to The Asylum earlier, and I'm sorry. This was cast via the Asylum method of casting, and I will not be told otherwise. Because toward the end of the Sharknado franchise, and you would see the list of people that they would have come in for cameos. And you can't help but go, how the fuck did they get that person? I'm telling you right now, by the end of Sharknado, every actor that came in, every celebrity that came in, it was literally the Asylum Studios that called them up and said, hey, you want to come and get killed by a shark? Yeah? Okay, cool. Here's the details. You seriously going to tell me that half of this cast was not brought in by, you want to come get mauled by a bear?
Yeah, it's definitely a, yeah, you want to come in, have some fun, and get mauled by a bear that's on cocaine. It's just, yeah, sign me up. Wait, this is a movie, right? Okay, just checking.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sometimes,
exactly.
Sometimes my agent doesn't pay attention to finer details. but yeah, like, you know, it's a lot of fun. Everyone involved seems to be having a lot of fun, though. The characters are great. The characters that you want to survive. The characters that you want to see die, mostly die. Again, I was expecting those kids, at least one of the kids, to die as like a trip up, you know, something of like a surprise. Even if it's like one of them slips at the very end and like bashes their head against the rock on the way down. It's like, oh, well, they made it so close. Anyway, we still have to jump.
Oh, and actually, speaking of slipping and hitting your head hard, you actually just reminded me of what I'm assuming is an accidental DCEU reference.
Presumably.
Okay, like seriously, I swear this connection will work. Now, do you remember in Birds of Prey, when Harley Quinn is doing battle with those thugs in the evidence locker room?
Yes, I do. Ah, and, okay, yeah. And she, yeah, the coke explodes.
They did the same thing here with Cocaine Bear.
I can see how, but also that wasn't the first time that ever occurred on screen or conceptually.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things of inevitability. If you have a room full of infinite typewriters with infinite monkeys whacking away at it, eventually you'll get the complete works of Shakespeare. If you have enough cocaine around kinetic energy, inevitably you're going to end up with a cloud of cocaine. And whoever's in that cloud, hey, you're having a great time, and then terrible issues with addiction afterwards. But yeah, like, having a lot of fun with the concept, that's for sure. And every possible way that that bear could have ingested cocaine or found a way to end up ingesting cocaine, they seem to have found it. Even if it meant ripping the leg off someone just to, like, sniff it real close up. You know what I would love to see from this, this film, since the titular cocaine bear survives at the end, I would like to see a proper 80s sequel to it. And of course, by proper 80s sequel, I mean, it either goes to a retrofuturistic future or it ends up in Afghanistan fighting the Soviets. I want to see Cocaine Bear and the lines, this movie goes out to the brave men and women, mostly men, pretty much only men, of the Mujahideen.
Yeah. Oh god, they could introduce Cocaine Bear to Opium.
Yeah, and you end up with, like, I don't know, Opium Lion. And it's just this lion that, like, won't get up until it needs its fix, and then it fucking mauls you.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, like, at the end of the movie, I'm sitting there going, you've clearly left the door open for a sequel, which I 1000% want, just because I'm looking at that opening and I'm going, how? What could you possibly do for Cocaine Bear 2?
Yeah, and, you know, like, the obvious answer is there probably, unfortunately, will not be a Cocaine Bear 2, but say the Cocaine Bears were captured for study and brought into a city. Now you have rampaging bears during the crack epidemic. just do a straight Predator 2. Straight Predator 2.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We haven't mentioned Kerry Russell yet, who is doing a Winona Ryder in Stranger Things level job of playing the mother in every 80s movie ever.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that, like, I can't remember what her character's name is. I suspect that for the longest time, as an in-joke, she was named Mama Bear.
Well, her name was Sari. And
that's not an 80s mom name. It should be like Kathy.
I mean, accurate. And also, speaking of Mama Bears, I loved how there was that moment in the cave where she gets Sid's rifle and just goes, Mama Bear as fuck.
I love that in his panic, he hands her the rifle and she immediately points it at him. It's like, what did you expect, asshole?
Oh, no. It wasn't that he handed it to her. He was trying to throw the rifle to one of his goons and missed.
Again, you've seen this twice. I have not. My watch through of it did not like give the idea that I thought that in a moment of pure stupid panic, he was like, all right, take the gun. And it's like, who'd you just give that to? Oh, fuck. It's one of the hostages.
That is basically what it was. He threw it to, I think it was Eddie, but it might have been O'Shea Jackson's David. I don't remember. It was definitely, he was trying to throw it to one of them so that they could get the cocaine. But I think he overthrew it because it sailed right past his two guys and went straight to Kerry Russell, who immediately picks it up, cocks it, aims it, is like, no, we're leaving.
Goodbye. Have fun. Goodbye.
Which, particularly in this movie, you're goddamn right, you're breaking out the Mama Bear here.
Yeah, and it's one of those, like, a lesser film would have made the joke outright. It would have said it. She would have said something about being a Mama Bear.
Oh, yeah.
I like how it's in a film called Cocaine Bear, subtle enough that you actually have to just take a moment and be like, ah, and she is showing the behavior of, aha.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's juxtaposition, baby.
Yeah, that was what made me immediately go, oh, that's perfect. That's, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
And it's little things like that, that this is why this film works so well, because it is a very stupid movie made by very talented and smart people who know how to make a stupid movie fun. Good.
Yeah. And last thing on my end, you want to know the very first quote this movie has listed on IMDb? Bear. Rawr.
Rawr. That's good. And that's one of those like little things of presumably someone from the production crew or marketing went in and changed that. And it's like, yeah, tiny little bits of love and attention. This is a film of tiny bits of love and attention.
Right down to a score and a soundtrack that I have not seen anything quite that perfect in an 80s tribute movie since Turbo Kid.
Yeah, that was both cliche and novel. It was exactly what you needed. It was exactly what you expected, but it was not trite. It was not like, they're gonna now play like fucking AC/DC, or they're, you know, like, here comes Poison. I can hear the White Snake warming up. You know, this was so well handled. This is such an inexcessive film for a film about excess. it's so precise in being a film where a bear throws itself like 30 fucking meters through the air, going something like 60 miles per hour, all to maul a guy on the off chance he might have cocaine.
Oh, exactly.
Actually, that is one thing. The only thing that I'm kind of sad they didn't do is in that moment, if you introduce paramedics and a full ambulance to a bear who is addicted to narcotics, I'm surprised that he didn't accidentally like stab it with adrenaline or something. And it's like, did you just speedball the bear? I just speedball the bear. The bear's now speedballing. Get the fuck out of the way.
Well, you know what? On the one hand, you're absolutely right. On the other hand, I think when the bear goes after the paramedic's medical bag, I'm kind of wondering if that was part of the reason that it focused on the medical bag and thus allowed the male paramedic to escape.
I suspected it was focusing on the medical bag because the medical bag was also red, just as the duffel bags. You know, it's just a basic like visual thing, but it would be just there's so many narcotics in that, and you have like you're a paramedic with an ambulance. I know that there's adrenaline on board. That I know that there is like high grade opiates aboard this vehicle. You know.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like when I say that it's focusing on it in part for the medication that's already in the bag, like literally what you just listed was the other part.
I just worry that like because we visually didn't see that, therefore it's not part of the storytelling of it. And yeah, headcanon versus, you know, this is a film that requires so much visual attention, because that's what, you know, you have a main character, the cocaine bear, who cannot speak, you know. That's the best you get. So you have to have all those things come through visually. The bear can't say how much he loves you. He has to stare at you longingly.
And get more fascinated by a butterfly than the dog in Up.
Yeah, and then try to eat the butterfly. That sudden shift of like, cocaine. Well, that was definitely a fun one. What though? Are we doing next?
Speaking of fun 80s films, and as has been promised for a couple weeks now, the next movie on my list is my introduction to actually a number of things entertainment related, which I'll go into next time, and that's Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home.
Yay! Yay! Finally, we get to go home. 1980s San Francisco, baby. Yeah. Everything smells like cigarettes. Ah, yeah.
Actually, what she meant to say was, oh, thank God he didn't change his mind and go back to 5.
Yeah, no. We will eventually do the final frontier, unfortunately. But
at some point that's gonna happen. But
yeah, first we're gonna get Voyage Home out of the way, because it is of course the most fun. It's simply like, in a lot of ways, it's the best Star Trek movie, and no, you can't argue that. It's box office, you dipshits. But more importantly, I think it's the best place to start really with Star Trek with people, because it's the best like slow lead in. It's not too weird. It's just weird enough. You don't get bogged down in the geekiness of things. And it has an overtly Star Trek-y message in Save the Fucking Whales, which people can understand very easily, separate from all of the Star Trek-y stuff. However, Instead of then going to the Final Frontier at some point next, whenever, I suggest that we backtrack and go all the way back to Forbidden Planet, then the motion picture, and then progress that way at some future date.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm 1,000% down for that because, yeah, give me an excuse to view Forbidden Planet again. I'm in. And where I haven't yet seen the director's cut of Star Trek, the motion picture.
Oh, in beautiful 4K. It's so pretty.
Oh, that's precisely why I'm like, yeah, just give me an opportunity.
Well, that is something to look forward to. I cannot wait for the voyage home. Yay, we're going home. Wales, yay. But until then, you can definitely contact us if you disagreed with our review, our glowing review of Cocaine Bear, which apparently only about 60% of the audience agrees with. What the fuck is wrong with the rest of you?
Well, I mean, again, look at everything around Quantumania, and that'll probably explain a fair bit. But if you would like to dispute our review in any way, if you would like my opinion on diet cocaine, well, I'll save you the trouble. It's really good. I've literally been drinking it the entire episode. we can be reached at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. Real Geeks HFX on Twitter. You can find me at The Merit Time Lord on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Hive, or TheMeritTimeLord@gmail.com.
And I can be found at Friday in Halifax on Twitter and Crash and Burn everywhere else.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
Come on, girl.
In here. Who is driving? Oh my God, Bear is driving. How can that be?